Welcome to another episode of Comparing Apples to Oranges. I'm Mike.
I am Dan.
And today we're bringing you another two things that belong in the same category that don't belong in the same genre. We're going to use a set of criteria to compare them, and we will determine which is better. Dan, what are we talking about today?
We are talking about versus films, and we are going to be comparing classic American slasher film Freddy vs. Jason versus
the cult American romantic comedy film Joe vs. the Volcano.
Should be interesting.
Yeah. I mean, because we're pitting two things that are pitting two things against each other, which is brilliant, right?
There's a lot of pitting. There's a lot of layers.
Just those. I'm pretty sure it's just those.
It's like breaking the fourth wall and then breaking it again.
Right. Is that like not acknowledging
that's
that
like,
you're breaking the
fourth
wall?
That's like eight walls.
That's a lot of walls.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's gonna be awesome.
The idea behind a versus film. I mean, there's a lot of action movies and fighting movies that pit two people against each other. But so we came up with this idea, and then we sort of did a little bit of research before we could find out how many movies were out there. We had pretty much picked these two before we did our research. I think there's only 10 movies that have the word versus in them when I did my research. What do you think, Dan?
I think there's a lot of like little like independent movies and things like that. Like if you look on Netflix.
Harry vs. Sally.
Yeah. I don't know. There was one called like Aliens versus Zombies
or
something.
No,
that
was a major. Oh, yeah.
You're thinking of Alien versus Predator.
I'm thinking of Aliens versus Monsters.
Yeah.
Which was that was actually really good.
Yeah, cartoon.
Yeah.
Right? Or an animated classic.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah, okay, I know what you're talking about now.
And there was
like Black Ops versus Zombie Ninjas.
Yeah.
That's at Netflix.
Yeah.
Or not Netflix, Redbox.
Redbox. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. And a lot of those movies, too, because I'm attracted to like anything with zombies in it. Not like sexually attracted, but I'm not saying I'm not sexually attracted to anything with zombies in it. But
that's up to you, the viewer, to decide.
That's right. It's up to you. But it like some of those movies, they originally had different titles, and then they
let me guess, they did not do so well because the quality of the film was quite terrible.
But if they changed the title to something like Vampires versus Zombies,
right,
then all of a sudden everybody's like, "Whoa, shit! I want to, I'm kind of interested in that."
Those two things I like.
Yeah, if you call it like Battle by Night or something like that, nobody cares. But if you call it Vampires versus Zombies,
yeah.
And I think I read somewhere that kind of started like that whole Redbox B movie, yeah, Netflix, and changing titles that kind of actually came from one of the movies that we're going to be talking about today because of appeal that movie had to fans of that genre over the years, the fan base that they had built up, and because of the title was catchy to a certain fragment of fans. They were changing their titles, these independent B-movies, to that to kind of cash in on that. So I don't want to give away the movies yet.
Okay, that's fine. I mean, we already
did it. Yeah. Shit. So Freddy versus Jason, not Joe versus the Volcano. But when Freddy versus Jason came out, everybody was like, oh, well, if we put verses in our little, shitty movie that came out that we've already made 5 years ago, all of a sudden, people were interested in it. After you've rented it, it's too late.
Right.
They've already got you. They already got your money.
Yeah, you can literally return it after you hand the money to the Blockbuster boy.
Yeah, they don't care.
And, I mean, it's all gravy to those guys.
Yep, exactly.
So I read, I'm going to do a lot of Wikipedia reading for this stuff because I have no context for either of these films. And Dan's going to flush out all of my research with, firsthand accounts of Freddy vs. Jason and their backstories. So
trying to look up more versus movies while you were talking.
I haven't pulled up. There's only eight.
But I see a pretty interesting movie poster for Gandhi versus Jason.
Gandhi?
Yeah. I think it's a fan-made movie poster. I don't think the movie actually exists, but I'd watch it.
I want to watch it.
I'd watch it.
I'm not going to watch anything else with Jason in it.
I'd watch it.
The last podcast Dan and I did together was with Halloween, was Michael Myers. So it's like, now I've seen all three, slasher monsters, and they're all just awful.
We haven't done Chucky yet, So,
that's not one of them, is it?
Oh, we haven't done Child's Play yet, so yeah, that's coming.
I don't want to do that. Anyway, apparently, Freddy vs. Jason was demanded by fans in 1987,
yeah.
Which it was like right after, I think all the Friday 13ths were like one right after the other in the 80s.
Yeah.
Just like bam, 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 bam.
Robert Englund was happy to work, guy that played Freddy Krueger. Actually does a lot of horror type characters. I think he might even have been Pinhead.
Oh, I have a note about that too. They said that at one point they were considering bringing in Pinhead from Hellraiser as like another character to fight in this two-way. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm getting ahead of myself with how disappointed I was.
Like Robert Englund, I mean, he was happy to work.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's really, do the scripts really take much thought to put into? He goes into your dreams, he kills people. You know?
There's all these rules. There were like dozens of rules.
Yeah, but once you got the rules down, like, it, you just pump them into, like, a computer, and it just spits out, you know, generic script, and then you film it.
The Plot-O-Matic 400.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the, easy money makers for the company, I don't know if it was New Line Cinema or Touchstone or whoever.
It was New Line and Paramount.
Whoever owned it at the time.
The other two.
Okay.
Like, they were separate at some, you know, before... Uh-huh. Everything was bought by Disney.
Yeah.
There used to be things.
It's either Disney or Warner Brothers.
There were two things that, like, were not the same. Different companies who made movies.
Yeah.
And I think they just teamed up. Or by 2003, which is when Freddy vs. Jason came out, they just, like, were owned by the same companies.
So yeah, like, I think that's what happened. But, you know, for those, like, Nightmare on Elm Street movies, for their respective companies, I mean, that was easy money for them.
Yeah.
You know, it was not a real high budget for the time.
Even though they did have a lot of practical effects. Which,
yeah.
I mean, like, that's sort of a nod towards the 80s era. That's what they really excelled in.
But, I mean, all things considered, relatively low budget, and you're going to make a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And especially back when, you know, video rentals were so big.
And actors weren't paid a lot because they didn't need to act.
Right. And they didn't have, you know, big name actors in these movies. Like Johnny Depp was in the first Nightmare on Elm Street, but that's before he was Johnny Depp.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think Kevin Bacon was in the first Friday the 13th.
No, you're thinking of Tremors.
Callback to a previous podcast. No, Kevin Bacon was in the first Friday the 13th, but that was before he was Kevin Bacon. Like, they didn't have big name actors, so they could put, you know, most of the budget into, you know, like you said, the practical effects and the puppetry and things like that. And it was easy money for them to make. They had a franchise. It had appeal.
It had a huge following. Mm-hmm. Both of them did.
Mm-hmm. And no matter, you know, what you put out there, people are going to go see it, even if Jason Takes Manhattan.
Which, so do you want to discuss the movies a little bit more, or do you want to jump into our criteria?
We could talk about them a little bit more.
Okay. So it said this film, Freddy vs. Jason, we don't have a lot to say about both of their series before they got rebooted, which I didn't know they got rebooted.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, did Rob Zombie do this reboot too, or did he only do Halloween? I should have looked that up. I don't think I care. So I think that's...
I know the guy who, the new Freddy Krueger, is the actor who was in The Watchmen. He was Rorschach in The Watchmen.
Yeah. That's...
And he's on Preacher now. We got interns that'll look that up for us.
Don't worry about it, Bill.
Come on back, Bill. Come on. We don't need you to look it up. Mike doesn't care.
Just sit quietly until we're
he
done.
He doesn't care enough. But yeah, they, so with Freddy vs. Jason, like you said, they were clamoring for this back in the 80s, but they were owned by two different companies and they couldn't come to an agreement on a script. And I think it kind of reminded me of like the King Kong versus Godzilla.
Right.
My dad used to tell me about that movie when it came out, because Godzilla was, you know, a Japanese company that owned the rights to it, and
Toei,
King Kong
or Toei
was an American company, and so they couldn't agree on the ending. So, like at the end of King Kong versus Godzilla, spoilers, they both fall like into the ocean, like off a cliff, and there's two different endings. In the Japanese version, Godzilla gets up out of the water and walks away. And in the American version, King Kong gets up out of the water and walks away. Yeah. Speaking of racist, Freddy Krueger's racist in this movie, too.
I want to get into that. I've got some thoughts on that.
But
besides agreeing with you, I should say that first.
So they couldn't agree on a script, I guess, on who would win or how it would go. And so it eventually got to the point in the late 90s, early 2000s, where they were owned by the same company. Then they could actually go forward with the film. Something that I was really excited about when it came out. I don't know why I was really excited about it when it came out, but I guess just growing up in that era, you know, being born in 1980 and, you know, just being, you know, kind of growing up with those movies, you know, as bad as they were overall. I mean, the first Nightmare on Elm Street was clever and it was different. And,
yeah.
But
scary.
But it just got, you know, silly after that. And
not silly in like a fun way.
No.
Because I know it seems like we only pick bad movies to watch, but that's not really the intention. Like, I don't enjoy watching bad movies. I enjoy watching campy movies sometimes, and I'll enjoy a movie that some people might consider bad because it has, you know, certain attributes that I always look for. But, I mean, I don't want to watch a bad movie because there's so much other stuff I could do, like watching a good movie or sitting quietly, like the, you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to watch a bad movie, and this was a pretty bad movie, man.
Yeah, Jackie Earle Haley is the new Freddy Krueger, by the way.
I want to remember that.
So Bill just looked it up, even though we told him not to. He doesn't listen.
I really, yeah, we got to deal with this. I didn't know how to bring it. I didn't want to bring it up.
We're having issues with respect.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, the big R. That's what I keep calling it.
But when this movie came out, you know, I went and saw it in the theater.
I think the idea of a crossover is just universally appealing because it literally brings the two of your favorite things together and has to decide which one's better. And I think with the unusual thing with Godzilla vs. King Kong had died in the end of regular King Kong. He shouldn't be alive.
Yeah.
And then Godzilla never dies because he's an atomic lizard. Like, that's the whole point. He just, like, gets knocked into the ocean and sleeps for a while.
Yeah.
And then Mothra comes up. And you're like, oh no, a giant moth.
I was like, wake up, Godzilla.
It's interesting that you bring that up because, like, Godzilla versus something, like, that's always what I would think of. Like, I thought that started it. But, I mean, a lot of people don't care about that.
Well, I think the concept of characters crossing over, I mean, in the 30s and 40s when, you know, Superman was around and Batman was around, it was a big deal when they would appear in the same comic.
Right.
I mean, you know, it would be a big seller for them.
Right.
And then now it's kind of commonplace. You know, we expect that to happen. But, you know, my dad tells me when he was, you know, he was kind of in the silver age of Marvel comics, like back in the 60s when the Fantastic Four and Spider-Man first came out. And it was a big deal when, like, Daredevil would show up in a Spider-Man book or something like that.
Right.
Now it's like every issue you expect somebody else to show up. But I think there's always that appeal when you have two characters that don't, you know, seem to exist in the same, I don't want to say the same universe because they do, but they don't exist in the same, you know, frame of mind for us when they show up together. So I think there's something kind of cool about that.
It's sort of a nod towards the fans where it's like, especially with when we're watching Luke Cage and they sort of like make a nod towards Hammer, which is from Iron Man 2. And you're like, oh, that's
you're
kind
like,
of,
oh boy.
It's just sort of like that, you know, if you pick up on that, it sort of rewards you for liking those two things. I don't know.
Well, they, you know, after Freddy versus Jason, I don't know if you found this because it wasn't actually on the Wikipedia page.
No, I didn't.
It happens to be something that I knew. That after Freddy versus Jason, it made a ton of money for the
both
company.
Of them? Wow.
Freddy vs. Jason made a ton of money. So they were wondering, like, what to do next. And the next idea that they had, and it got to the point to where I think they had a script and I think they were going to start pre-production on it, was they were going to do Freddy vs. Jason versus Ash from The Evil Dead, Bruce Campbell's character from The Evil Dead. It never materialized, but then it became a comic book. So it was like a 6-issue miniseries comic book where it's supposed to take place like 5 years after Freddy versus Jason, and Freddy is somehow living in Jason's, like trapped in Jason's head, and he's trying to use the Necronomicon to
bring himself back.
And so that actually became, I read the first one. It wasn't very good.
Whoa.
And then there was a sequel to that, which I never read. So Freddy versus Jason versus Ash, part two. But yeah, it was. So they tried to, and I'm surprised they didn't make another one, because it made so much money for them.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, all things considered, kind of a big budget for them. But I still think it was only like 40 something million to make it, because they still didn't have, you know, big name stars or anything right. like that. I'm really surprised they didn't, you know, capitalize on that.
I think maybe Bruce Campbell put his foot down. He's like, I'll do a lot of stupid stuff, but really?
Bruce Campbell.
Remember him? He was in Xena.
Yeah.
He was pretty good.
Yeah.
It's not bad.
Bruce Campbell will happily take a payday. That was, you know, kind of the genesis of that. And then, like, what happened afterward, which I didn't even know that if you knew about that or not.
No. Ash has his own, or Bruce Campbell's character Ash has his own versus.
Mm-hmm.
Television show.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, I like it.
I haven't seen season two, which just finished up, but I really like season one.
Yeah, it's very Ash versus Evil Dead.
Right.
It's very over the top. And speaking of Xena, Lucy Lawless is on that show.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, reunited, and it feels so good.
Doesn't feel bad, that's for sure.
So, Joe, I think we've spent a lot of time on Freddy versus Jason. I think we're kind of pushing Joe to the back.
Okay, so. Well, I mean, it is a cult film. Not that it has a cult in it. I don't know how you would designate that.
There's a lot of big names in this movie.
Yeah, Robert Stack. If you guys are familiar
Unsolved
with...
Unsolved Mysteries.
Love that show. I can't associate him with anything else.
Though. I like that he's the first actor that you go to over Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan.
I mean, they're on the cover. This is sort of like...
And you're like, Robert Stack's in it.
I mean, it's a...
He's also an Airplane.
Who was he? Was he the pilot?
He was like a former pilot.
Okay.
Who they bring in. He's like, his best scene, I think, is when he's going through the airport and he's being accosted by all the people trying to hand him flyers and leaflets.
Right.
And he's, you know, drop kicking everybody and judo tossing them. And yeah. Robert Stack's good, man.
He's not bad.
Yeah.
So this is a romantic comedy starring Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan. And I think this was a trivia question. They said, name three romantic comedies that Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan were in. And it's Joe vs. the Volcano, You've Got Mail, and then one that I forgot.
Because Sleepless in Seattle? Sleepless in Seattle.
Okay.
Harry Met Sally's Billy Crystal
right.
and Meg Ryan.
Right. Okay. So those are the three. This was written by John Patrick Shanley. He's also the writer and director of these four movies that sort of tell you how rich his range.
Pedigree?
Rich his range is. He wrote the movie Doubt, which, you know, hardcore, very scary topic, like very sad, very intense. Then he wrote the movie Congo, which with Michael Crichton adaptation of like monkeys, and then Alive, which was about the plane crash where the people had to eat each other.
Wow.
And Moonstruck with Cher. So, I mean, like, this guy... And Joe vs. the Volcano was, like, one of his earlier films. Writer and director, it's kind of cool.
He's got a lot of range, man.
Tom Hanks does a pretty good job of sort of being an everyman, sort of like a blank slate. Doesn't really Tom Hanks it up too much. Like, because now I don't think Tom Hanks can be in a movie without being Tom Hanks. And that's not his fault. It's just, like, you know...
Yeah, you're not a big fan. We've talked about this.
I think that
he plays the same character.
I don't think it's his fault that he got the Congressional Award of Freedom, but I'm upset that he got it.
I'm upset that Ellen DeGeneres got it.
Really?
But
over Tom Hanks.
Oh, come on. Tom Hanks is a national treasure.
No, you're thinking of National Treasure with Nicolas Cage.
Nicolas Cage, you're right.
Leaving Las Vegas. He's Grammy nominated, no, award nominated.
The only two things that Ellen DeGeneres has done are dance,
Finding Dory,
That's
a bad example. Finding Nemo,
Dory, and dancing. You don't get a Medal of Freedom for that. Tom Hanks has got a lot of Academy Awards.
That's not a good sign. That's just
no.
Arbitrary.
That's good. That's good.
All right, whatever. what else do I write down? Oh, so here's one of the reviewer's comments that I wrote down. Random critic said, "Not since Howard the Duck has there been a big budget comedy with feet as flat as those of Joe versus the Volcano." Mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't know if that's a compliment, but I enjoyed the movie, so I don't know.
Flat feet, man, keep you firmly on the ground.
Is that what that means?
Yeah, that's the old, that Ben Franklin said that.
Oh, he didn't have flat feet. He was a loon.
Roger Ebert liked it.
That's true.
Which is kind of, you know.
He shows up a lot in these Wikipedia articles now. Mm. I think it's because he's passed away. Yeah. And he's, I mean, like, nobody talks about Siskel.
Yeah.
And he died a long time ago. And nobody talks about Roper because that guy sucks. So.
Yeah, Ebert's kind of the go-to.
He's sort of the most level-headed, too.
Yeah.
Like, he'll give, like, Joe vs. the Volcano, like, he is a romantic comedy. And he, like, you know, gave it its laurels.
Yeah, he said it was new and fresh and not shy of taking chances.
And then apparently in 2012, so 22 years after it was made, it was presented as a musical.
Everything's a musical now.
Which there is, like, music plays a role in this, but there's almost, like, there's probably only, like, less than 40 minutes of dialogue.
Isn't Goodfellas, like, a musical now, or...
You're thinking of Spamalot.
Donnie Brasco or something. One of those is like,
really?
Is like a musical now.
I thought it was... Was it Serpico? Because that might be at like a TV show I watch where they made that into a musical.
No, it's something that you... Or Bronx Tale. I know Bronx Tale is a musical now.
I don't know what that is.
It's just...
The Departed?
They turn everything into musicals now. Yeah. So there's...
Shrek's a musical.
And some of them don't make it very far. Like, they don't ever make it...
Spider-Man's a musical.
They don't ever make... Oh, God. They don't even make it to Broadway.
Right.
You know, they don't even make it to Off-Broadway. You know, it just never gets any traction. I don't know what the musical version of Joe versus Volcano is like. Maybe that's another podcast. We could do musicals based on... You know,
nope.
Unnecessary musicals based on movies.
So what did you think? I ran out of stuff to talk about Joe vs. Volcano besides like my reactions to the film.
Well,
do you have any more?
Well, I mean, the premise of the film.
Does it take place in like an alternate dystopian future, or is that just supposed to be like, hey, getting a job sucks? Like,
yeah, I think it's. I mean, a better title would be like Joe versus Crippling Depression.
Joe versus the Brain Cloud?
Yeah. So Joe is like a former firefighter.
Apparently he has PTSD.
Yeah.
Undiagnosed.
And he hates his life.
He
works at the same job and he can't even stand like the fluorescent lights and anything.
They're like a medical supply and they keep making jokes about rectal probes.
Yeah.
Like... A lot of
jokes.
But not the jokes you're thinking.
Yeah.
Like, that they just have a sign, they're like, rectal probes.
Like, satisfied customers, and it's like a little, like, ticker, like
right.
The old McDonald's ones.
Which,
on
is a rectal probe a rectal thermometer? I mean, like...
Just a probe. Just, look around in there. you know, make sure everything's okay.
Do they just make sex toys?
They also make petroleum jelly,
yeah.
They said, too.
Which was pretty gross.
Which kind of
worked.
It goes with the rectal probe.
I mean, yeah.
But those were kind of like... There was some good humor in there.
Yeah, I
mean, there wasn't
not just the rectal probe.
Yeah, that was kind of like the
there icing on the cake. Is what
yeah,
you're
no, that those were kind of like the jokes, like the obvious ones that you didn't really laugh at. But like the lines that Tom Hanks when he kind of finally goes nuts and quits his job, how him kind of going off on his boss and on the office. I thought that was
the boss
good.
Is famous too. Who's the boss? Do you remember
Tony Danza?
I was not ready for that. I believed you for a quarter of a second.
Tony Danza's the boss. Mona was the boss.
Is that
I think we.
Alyssa Milano?
No.
Okay. She's in that movie, right?
Judith Light is the boss.
Know.
Who's the boss?
Dude, Judith Heavy.
How are you going to set me up like that? Yeah, the boss in that movie, he had some good lines, too.
Yeah.
When he was
just on the phone. Which
he
is,
was on the phone.
That takes some good acting.
I know he could get the job, but can he do the job? And then 2 minutes later, I know he can get the job.
Like a 3-minute uncut shot of just him saying the same.
And it was pretty. I thought it was
some good
acting.
Funny. Yeah,
yeah. But I don't remember. If you saw him, you would recognize him.
Yeah,
he's a very
prominent
character actor. Yeah.
Yeah,
you know, there was some funny stuff in there. See, I like when Tom Hanks is playing Tom Hanks. You know,
yeah.
he's really good in that. you know, kind of dry humor, you know, role. When he tries to stretch a little too much, I think that's where people like you kind of turned off.
So you're saying I don't like it when he doesn't act like Tom Hanks.
I don't know what I'm saying.
Gotcha.
Got it. But
who's the boss now?
Tony Danza's the boss.
Bruce Springsteen. Rick Ross called himself the boss for a while, too.
No, he's not the boss.
I didn't say he was. I just said he called himself that.
So
anyway.
So he can't figure out, like you said, it's PTSD pretty much. But he can't figure out why it just feels like crap all the time. So he's going to all these doctors, and he finally goes to a doctor, Robert Stack.
Unsolved Mysteries.
Which
would be a pretty appropriate...
Who solves the mystery.
Or does he?
Spoilers.
Yeah, total spoilers.
That he has what's called a brain cloud, and then he has like 6 months to live. And he tells him to, you know, live his life to the fullest. And so this eccentric billionaire, was Lloyd Bridges? Also mm-hmm. from Airplane.
Right.
So we got the cast of Airplane in here.
Just nailing it.
Not bad. And he's only in the movie for like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
He presents Joe with a proposition where he found out that he only had 6 months to live, and he was going to give him credit cards basically to do whatever he wanted with them, and, you know, to kind of live life for, you know, a couple weeks. But in exchange, he wanted Joe to go to this island in the...
Like South Pacific.
South Pacific, where there's this apparently this mineral that he really needs for his company. And it's only prominent on this island. And the people on the island won't let him mine for the mineral unless he helps them out. And they have the superstition about the volcano on the island where... Every 100 years, I think it is, they have to, somebody has to...
A hero
has to make a willing sacrifice, so you can't just throw somebody into the volcano. Somebody has to willingly sacrifice themselves into the volcano to keep the volcano happy so it won't sink the island. Lloyd Bridges, to get to mine the mineral, he agrees to find somebody to go into the volcano. And then the other deal is... To get Joe to do it, he gives him a bunch of money to spend to kind of live his
life. Yeah. The last of his life.
Exactly. So that's the premise of it. And then he meets several Meg Ryans along the way.
Right.
And
I didn't find it unusual. I just found it sort of quirky because she did a pretty good job. So Meg Ryan shows up as a pair of half-sisters, like with different wigs and different, not accents, but like vocal dialects mm-hmm. of California.
And she's also the worker
in the
office at the beginning.
Which is, it's not...
Kind of like an Eddie Murphy and Coming to America kind of thing.
I was worried you were going to say Nutty Professor.
Eddie Murphy and the Nutty Professor.
The Clumps.
That too.
Oh man, talk about bad movies.
He plays
movies.
Like 10 roles.
Yeah, all of them female for some reason. Doesn't mm-hmm. make any sense. Okay, so I think we did a pretty good... idea of what the movies were about, so you want to... Let's talk about our criteria.
Sure.
Let's break down the four criteria we decided on. This was a little bit tricky to decide because we tried to do two general criteria that have to do with movies and two that were specific to movies that had verses in the title. So we sort of bantered back and forth and came up with the following. The general ones, we have rewatchability. Would you have other people watch this movie? Would you tell other people that you have seen this movie once?
Or if it was, you know, if it was on, would you leave it on or would you turn it off?
Right.
I think that happens a lot with, especially with like basic cable. You know, there's a lot of movies, they just like kind of cycle, you know, movies like this with commercial interruption. You know, would you watch the movie again? Would you want to watch the movie again?
And then climactic battle. So... If the movie has verses in the title, how awesome is the final battle between the two titular characters? Like, is it... Dan talked about how Batman vs. Superman was amped up, and then the fight itself lasted, like, 8 minutes.
And then they're best friends.
Right.
After that.
So...
Because they both had the moms of the same name.
Right. Which was... thank God, right?
Yeah, because if they didn't...
I mean...
Superman's dead.
Yeah. And then
that's a whole new different movie.
Everybody's dead because we needed anyway.
Yeah.
Don't watch that. We just saved you 3 hours.
It's 3 hours
of your life.
Yeah, it is.
So we didn't watch that one on purpose. Zack Snyder.
Because it sucks.
Looking at you, dummy. How awesome is the battle? Is it fun? Is it worth the experience? Is it an actual battle?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Dan, you want to cover the second general criteria?
Sure. We like doing cast chemistry, and we've done that a few times with the movies that we talked about. Just how do the cast play off each other? How do they interact? Do they, you know, make each other better? Is there something positive, something, I don't want to say magical, but, you know, some kind of interaction that makes the movie more appealing?
Because a script can be awesome,
mm-hmm,
and totally flop because of actors' stiff, you know, cardboard acting.
Mm-hmm.
Or they can pull some terrible stuff together and make it pretty good because they can really do it well.
And that's why they'll have actors read with each other. You know, if they have like a star of the film, they'll bring in several actors or actresses to read with them to see if they do have that chemistry before they go on film. And sometimes after it goes to, they start to production, they decide, uh-oh, you know, we made the wrong choice. I think that happened with Back to the Future.
Oh, I didn't know.
Where Michael J. Fox wasn't the original Marty McFly.
Really?
Yeah, they actually have, like, I think on, like, the DVDs, you can see, like, the actual first couple of scenes with whoever it was that was before Michael J. Fox just didn't have that chemistry with Christopher Lloyd, I guess it was. And then they actually recast his girlfriend in the second one. I guess that's when it became Elizabeth Shue, I think, in the second one. Or maybe she was in the first one and then they recast her. There's all kinds of problems in the Back to the Future movies.
Yeah.
Other than explaining, you know, the problems of time travel. But apparently there's problems with cast chemistry.
Right.
And then the last category was, we kind of had a hard time putting, words to explain it, but worthiness of a versus title.
Because Mortal Kombat in the movie Street Fighter, they didn't have versus in there. But it's all about, like, it's constantly fighting.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all of the war movies you want to pick, they didn't, you know, bring up versus or any of that. But why did these movies decide to have a versus in the title?
So we talked about, like, those B movies that changed their titles. Like, there was one that was, like, Vampires versus Zombies or something like that I watched years ago. Not that long ago, but
yeah,
a few years ago. Because I had my summers off and I was bored.
Right.
And it was not about vampires and zombies fighting each other.
Oh, no.
It was...
The old bait and switch?
Yeah.
No.
The bait and switch. But that was a catchier title than, you know, Night Battle or,
right,
you know, whatever. Battle for the Night or whatever. That was not like the overarching point of the film, was that these two factions are at war. That wasn't... So it was a very misleading title. So I wouldn't think that would be very worthy of a versus title. I haven't seen Alien versus Predator.
I did.
You did?
Sucked.
Now, is that worthy of a versus title? Are they kind of... Are they battling...
So I think a versus title inevitably has the audience pick a winner,
okay,
in their mind. So it's like you go in and Freddy says something racist and you're like, you know what? I don't think I like Freddy very much. I want him to get killed.
Uh-huh.
Or the implication is that Freddy only kills young girls.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's a bad guy. And Jason, you're supposed to feel empathy or sympathy for him because everybody made fun of him.
He's an equal opportunity killer.
He had a giant head and he only punished people.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you're supposed to feel that Jason should win. And in Alien vs. Predator, you feel the exact same way where you're like, you're rooting for the Predator. And at one point, humans get involved because the tagline for that was Alien vs. Predator. Whoever wins, we lose.
Uh-huh.
So you're like, oh, cool. But then the movie was all about, like, humans teaming up with predators to kill aliens.
Mm.
And then inevitably, one of the humans becomes a predator. Like, because she kills an alien, so they, like, give her predator status.
Mm.
This is, like,
yeah,
not me being confused. These are the actual events that happen.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I mean, like, yes, that was more worthy of a title than, like, Batman vs. Superman. Or you brought up Scott Pilgrim vs. the World,
mm-hmm,
where he doesn't. Now, I think the original title was Scott Pilgrim vs. the Evil Exes, right? That was the graphic novel title, rather?
It was...
Was that, like, one of the names?
I think it was just called Scott Pilgrim. In each volume of the graphic novel, he fights a different
evil X.
So it's like Scott Pilgrim.
He wasn't really fighting the world, is right. what you're. Yeah. Why you thought that was a bad title for it.
Yeah. You know, speaking of versus titles, I just was remembering all these like comic books that were big like in the 90s. They had like RoboCop versus Terminator and like
Batman. I thought they would get along.
Batman versus Predator and then Batman versus Predator versus Aliens. Like these all came out like before the movies.
Really? Because yeah. I thought then, like, that was... Maybe they reissued
Superman versus Aliens was one.
That's an easy one.
Tarzan was in there at one point. It was like Batman versus Edgar Tarzan versus Predator.
I guess he was in like the public domain pretty early.
That's that when was, like, was written in the when 1880s. Comics were kind of struggling and they were just kind of trying to bring in like movie franchises to mix with comic book characters.
I remember at one point Superman fought Mike Tyson or was it Muhammad Ali?
Muhammad Ali, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense. I mean, he still had his cape on. He didn't even have, like...
Yeah, like and boxing
gloves. Boxing shorts. That's racist.
Yeah, Muhammad Ali whooped his ass, too.
That can't... Did he have... That doesn't make sense!
He had some... They had some kind of...
He cheated.
They had some kind of special lighting or something to give him... To make it more even, because otherwise he'd just punch his head right off.
Well, that's not fair. Superman doesn't, like, do any weights.
I know,
like,
that's what I'm saying. Fair. Like, Muhammad Ali should whoop his ass if all things are equal. Like, Superman's just...
He's a
like,
pencil pusher, that nerd.
He doesn't really know how to fight.
Yeah.
You know?
He just punches stuff.
He's strong, and that makes up for the fact that he doesn't have technique.
Yeah, he also has, like, a real weak left.
Like, yeah.
His haymaker is a
You can
joke.
See it coming from a mile away. Like,
except for the fact that he's lightning fast. So yeah. Of course you can't.
See, that's what it makes up. It makes up for the fact that he can't fight. I think that was actually... Like in the first Man of Steel movie, like that's why like so much shit got destroyed because he doesn't really know.
Plus,
he's strong.
Plus, it wasn't a very good movie.
No, it wasn't. No, there's that.
So those are our four criteria. Yeah. Now we're going to just jump into it. So strap in.
Strap in.
Which one do you want to? Let's talk about rewatchability.
Okay.
Because I did not like Freddy vs. Jason while I was watching it.
Mm-hmm.
I think I could rewatch Joe vs. Volcano because I wouldn't say it had themes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it had a couple subtle lessons about life, but it wasn't... It sort of let you know what it was about pretty early on.
I picked Joe vs. Volcano, too, just because it was... I mean, it had some charm to it. You know?
I also enjoyed the fact that there were... subtle, not tropes, but like there was certain like cinematic language that was used more than once. Like there was a crack in like a lightning bolt sort of thing that they walked up to their work, and then it was also in Joe's apartment, like his wall had a crack in it, and then there was like the crack of lightning that split the boat, and then there was the path up to the volcano that was like the identical thing. So it's like certain visual.
And the same thing, the path up to the...
volcano, yeah.
No, to the...
the work, to the factory.
Yeah, that's what you're saying.
Yeah.
And I was kind of looking at that because it took, like, these, like, weird angles. Mm-hmm. And these, like, these zombie workers are kind of just like...
It.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of cool.
So, like, the imagery gets repeated and you're like, well, why is it here? It's like, well, everything's different, but this is the same. So, I thought you could go back and watch that from the beginning. I think that would be kind of interesting.
Well, plus, too, like, we watched it for this, but I'm sure my wife would like it because...
It's delightful.
You know,
it's Tom
she
Hanks.
Likes Tom Hanks. She Meg likes, Ryan. You know, Meg Ryan was America's sweetheart at one point.
Yeah.
Before she ruined Russell Crowe's marriage.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah.
Russell Crowe's kind of a jerk, though.
Yeah, he's a total dick. But, like, apparently he was married, and him and Meg Ryan made a movie together. And
proof of life.
Yeah, and he cheated on his wife with Meg Ryan.
Classy.
And, yeah, because he's a classy guy.
Yeah, that's why I liked him in Gladiator.
Yeah, he's a piece of shit, though.
And L.A. Confidential. That's a good movie, too.
Whatever.
Anyway.
But,
all right,
yeah,
so.
I could totally see myself, like, watching, like, Joe versus... I wouldn't... Hey, babe, let's watch Freddy versus Jason.
I couldn't do it. Like, I could not rewatch it. Yeah. Like, it was
I could rewatch Joe versus Volcano.
Yeah.
It had, like I said, it had some funny moments in it.
Not like tomorrow. I'd give it a good 6 months.
Yeah.
So I would forget some of it.
Yeah, but I could see how it wasn't super well received, like, overall by critics.
Yeah, or by audiences, because it's so quirky.
But you just said quirky. I could totally see how it could be a cult film.
Mm-hmm.
I could totally see how people would... You know, would that would appeal that It's just it's a very different concept, and even the title, you know,
right,
is quirky. So I think we both went with that one for rewatchability.
All right, I want to do cast chemistry next because I think that has a lot to do with rewatchability in my experience for these two. I went with Joe versus the Volcano in this one.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Because I just really enjoyed Tom Hanks interacting with some of these characters, like Lloyd Bridges. Awesome job.
Mm-hmm. Quit your job, huh?
Yeah.
That sounds like a dumb job. No family? Good for you. Families are a pain in the neck. What do you know about superconductors?
Nothing.
Me neither. But I own a huge company that dominates the world market for superconductors.
Really?
Sit down.
They didn't spend a lot of time soul-searching or... Mm-hmm. The big questions of life until it was like him and one of the Meg Ryans flirting. Like, mm-hmm. Which is, you know, I thought that was the appropriate time to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because...
And he flirts with all three of the Meg
Ryans.
Yeah,
he does. Oh, and that's another thing.
And he gets progressively more advanced.
A little bit closer.
Yeah.
I almost spoiled it. Oh, boy.
Because with the first Meg Ryan, when he kind of, you
quits
know...
his job.
Bucks up and quits his job, he kind of, you know, finally gets the courage to ask her out. And they're about to do the deed, but then he tells her that he's dying
in
6 months.
Quite a turnoff, turns out.
Yeah, and so she heads out. And then the second Meg Ryan, who actually takes him to the boat to go to the island, he gives her a little kiss on the cheek.
But she does offer to, like, sleep with him, but it's also evident that she's sort like she's going through a lot of stuff.
Yeah, she hates her life, too.
Emotionally vulnerable.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, again, endears us to our character again. It's like that, even though Meg Ryan was playing a vapid, like, California socialite.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a choice between killing yourself and doing something you're scared of doing, why not take the leap and do the thing you're scared of doing?
You mean stop taking money and leave L.A.?
You see, you know what you're scared of doing. Why don't you do it? See what happens.
You must be tired.
I don't mind talking.
Well, I do. This is one of those typical conversations where we're all open and sharing our innermost thoughts, and it's all bullshit and a lie, and it doesn't cost you anything.
I thought she did a pretty good job with it, and the way that they interacted I thought was genuine. Even though it was different than how he was interacting with the other two Meg Ryans eventually.
I think that was kind of, there was kind of an underlying thing there too with, you know, Tom Hanks was very depressed,
right,
you know, in this movie. But then he sees that somebody like the second Meg Ryan's character who has all this money and all,
she
you
gets
know,
to be an artist.
Yeah.
And
a poet.
Right.
Which was kind of funny too.
So she's effectively, you know, on the surface living out her dream.
Right. But she's like super depressed too.
Right.
And so Tom Hanks kind of like he has to kind of be like her crutch.
Right.
Where, you know, he was the one who was going through all the problems early in the film. And then he's kind of the voice of reason with her, which I thought was kind of a, you know, neat transition for him. But, her poetry was pretty good too. Like, you want to hear one of my poems?
And right.
It's like one line. Do you want to hear it again? Tom Hanks, sure. You know, just that very dry delivery. Yeah. Right.
And then the chauffeur and Tom Hanks interaction.
Oh, my God. He was my favorite. Ozzie Davis.
That was hilarious.
Was my favorite character.
Because
he's great.
They tried to do the thing where they have, like, the one African-American in the movie was also sort of, like, giving advice. He was, like, the wise sage.
Like the spiritual advisor.
But they didn't play up that he was black really hard.
Yeah.
So I appreciated that. Where it was just like, no, this guy's driving he's a chauffeur. And Tom Hanks is literally looking to anybody for advice, and it's just like, it's like, no, we're going to go get you some nice clothes. And, you know, it wasn't just, oh, I'm here, you know, yes, sir, I'll give you all my advice. It's like they had a, you know, a realistic exchange, and it was, I really enjoyed it.
Where would you like to go shopping?
I don't know.
All right.
Well, where would you go shopping?
What for? What do you need?
Clothes.
What kind of clothes? What's your taste?
Well, I don't exactly know. Why are you stopping the car?
Just hire me to drive the car, sir. I'm not here to tell you who you are.
I didn't ask you to tell me who I am.
You're hinting around about clothes. That happens to be a very important topic to me, sir. Clothes. Mr.
Banks.
Banks. Clothes makes the man. I believe that. You say to me you want to go shopping, want to buy clothes, but you don't know what kind. You leave that hanging in the air like I'm going to fill in the blanks. Now, that to me is like asking me who you are, and I don't know who you are. I don't want to know. It's taken me all my life to find out who I am, and I am tired now. You hear what I'm saying? What's your name?
Joe.
My name's Marshall. How you do? Wait a minute. I'm coming back.
Okay.
But, you know, then it's kind of sad, too, because at the end of their day together, Tom Hanks says, well, you want to come get dinner with me?
Right.
Because he doesn't have anybody.
And you're just like, oh, of course they're going to have dinner
together.
Yeah,
and Ozzie Davis's character is like, no, I have a family and a wife. I need to get home to it, but I wish you the best of luck.
Right.
He was my favorite character in either film.
Yeah.
I thought he was, and he was only in it for like, you know, less than 10 minutes.
Wait,
probably.
You didn't like Kelly Rowland's character?
I like her music.
Eh.
I don't even know if that's true.
Yeah, it's all right.
She's not a very good actor.
But, I mean, like, why would you be a good actor in that movie?
I don't know.
So, cast
effort, try.
Cast chemistry in Freddy vs. Jason was, like, Jason's acting was probably the most believable. Everybody else was, like, just awful. Like,
Jason did a good job.
I mean, he pulled it off. he pulled it off.
He nailed it, I would say.
Like, Freddy literally does everything over the top.
Don't worry about my little Aaron, boy. The only thing to fear is fear himself.
Which apparently is just par for course.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
that's just him.
He just yells bitch every second he can.
Well, I told you about that Rick and Morty episode.
I forgot about it until you told me, and then I remembered like him sitting down and calling his wife.
Aw,
like,
bitch.
Right. That's actually what jogged my memory.
Yeah, it's so they saw that same thing that you saw.
Yeah. Welcome to my world, bitch.
Because it's there's add bitch to the end of
which
it.
Which isn't a problem if you can punctuate it correctly.
Die, little bitch.
But it's like he only has like 40 lines.
Mm-hmm.
Think you're so smart, huh, bitch?
And 25 of them are him saying bitch?
Yeah.
Like at the end.
Well, that shows how tough he is, though.
But he's not that tough.
He's tough and cool.
He got killed by a bunch of like vigilante like elementary school parents. You know what I mean? Like
that's before he had like magic powers, though.
No, that's how he got magic powers. Because like a bunch of like angry parents took the alright. Anyway.
Yeah. Now but he has magic
like,
powers.
It's difficult to care about any of the characters because none of them have redeemable qualities, and I don't know why their lives are threatened. Like, you're supposed to think they're bad because they're teenagers who drink, smoke pot, and have sex.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're supposed to want them to die,
mm-hmm.
I guess? And then, except for the one who you're supposed to root for, I didn't understand who I was supposed to root for. Because it was called Freddy vs. Jason, so mm-hmm. I'm like, am I supposed to root for... Oh, Freddy's a racist. He's just arbitrarily going to kill some teenagers.
Yeah.
And he, like, has his sights set on some.
Uh-huh.
And Kelly Rowland's character is like...
So you're the one everyone's afraid of? I mean, come on, get real. You're not even scary. You're not even scary. And let's talk about the butter knives. What is with the butter knives? You trying to compensate for something?
Freddy, like...
Talks about the size of his penis.
Legitimately... is torn between killing these two people he was about to kill on purpose, and he's like so drawn by his racist mm-hmm. like roots that he's like, no, I have to kill this black person first.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just like, you see it in his face. He's like, well,
it's either it's two white people or one one black girl.
And then he's
oh, sweet dark.
I don't know.
Yeah, that I didn't like that.
What that means. Like, it wasn't even... You're just like, oh, man, all this time he was racist? Now I don't like him. Yeah. I liked him when he only killed little
when
girls.
When he only killed little girls. And they don't say that he molested them or anything, but I think it's implied.
Because he licks the picture,
yeah.
But it's after she's dead.
Yeah.
So it's like, I guess he's just a necrophiliac.
I hope he didn't molest him after he was dead.
I would prefer that.
God.
Either way... all of the characters are bad.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's because they're poorly written or overacted, but it's just, like, not...
Did you root... You rooted for Jason at the end, though, right?
I don't... No. I didn't... I wanted them all to die.
I kind of wanted Jason. I mean, especially when they had, like, the... Like, the scenes of him being bullied when he was... How did when he was little.
Yeah, but, like, it wasn't... It was a complete accident. Like, kids were being mean, which kids will do. And then, like, teenagers were not paying attention. And then this kid... Like, why didn't it that crazy mom teach her kid how to swim before she sent him to summer camp? That's kind of a... If well, anybody's to blame...
You gotta feel... I mean, you kind of feel bad for him because he's got a shitty mom...
Yeah,
and he looks.
He gets to go to camp.
He looks like you know the
elephant
the thing,
man.
The thing,
John
yeah,
Eric.
Yeah. He looks like the guy from the Goonies, and
Sloth.
Yeah, he has no friends, and nobody gives shit about him. And he.
But then I'm supposed to want him to murder? Like he's literally just murdering everybody.
I wanted him to kill Freddy.
But like, why?
Because Freddy's racist. He's
oh,
awful.
Yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah, you're right. I forgot about that.
He's an awful, even in real life. He was just horrible.
Here's the thing. I think if Freddy would have, like, saluted an American flag or, like, done what, like, they just did one more stupid thing to, like, make you like Jason a little bit more, I think I would have hated this movie. Like, right now I just disliked it because it was bad. But if they did one more, like, oh, look, Jason isn't going to kill the driver of that Mountain Dew truck because he likes Mountain Dew. I like Mountain Dew. Go, Jason. You know what I mean? It's like, it's too laid out for me.
You know, and we'll get to the climactic battle in a minute. You know, I was actually had a, you know, vested interest in Jason, especially after, you know, the bullying and things like that. And maybe it's just the fact that, you know, Jason couldn't communicate. You know, that...
He chose not to communicate. He also grew into a giant man.
A huge gentleman.
Why didn't he come back as, like, a malformed youth with a machete and a hockey mask?
Yeah.
I missed the first one, so there's probably a lot of plot holes that I'm...
He's not even in the first one. Like, his mom is the bad guy.
Of Friday the 13th?
Mm-hmm. He doesn't show up... Like, the hockey mask killer doesn't show up till, like, the second one.
Really? What?
Mm-hmm. Wow. Go back and watch it, man. Kevin Bacon.
I don't know that.
Kevin Bacon.
I don't want to do it.
Have a Kevin Bacon night.
All right. I'm going to watch Tremors twice. Uh-huh. All right. Oh, Stir of Echo is a pretty good Kevin Bacon movie.
Nah.
I'm going to have him. Hey, it is.
Nah.
You can see it.
Wild Things.
Oh, boy.
You get to see Kevin Bacon's penis. You get to see Kevin's bacon.
Gross. What a terrible euphemism for a penis.
I thought it was great.
It's not that good. I didn't see it.
Yeah, Kelly Rowland talks about Freddy's penis for...
Hurts his feelings.
A couple minutes, yeah.
So then I'm rooting for Freddy, you know, because I'm like, he doesn't need that.
Nah.
He didn't need that.
Nah, he should have a small penis.
Well, he's dead, so...
I mean, like, and...
Anyway.
He's a horrible person.
Anyway. You know? Anyway, let's talk about the climactic battle, because I think that's the easiest one to talk about. I'm giving it to Freddy versus Jason.
Yeah, you are.
Because it's a pretty good... So that's not true. It's not good. It's
they fight for like 15 minutes though.
But none of it. Neither of them can die.
Yeah.
They also fight in the dream, which I don't understand a lot about dream fights because I would just assume that like because you're in a dream, and because Freddy literally yells as soon as he can, he's like, "Oh, you're in my dream." Mm-hmm. Like, just use some dream powers. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like,
well, he does.
No, Freddy uses dream powers.
Yeah.
Jason doesn't.
Yeah. Well, Freddy is. You know, he has, you know, all the power.
Right. In dreams.
In dreams.
But he also has powers outside of dreams.
Somewhat. Can't, like in the dream, he's making Jason, like, he can just flick his wrist and Jason, like,
telekinetic. Playing pinball with him.
Yeah.
Which is definitely a missed opportunity for a pinball machine.
He says tilt at the end. That was
That was
clever.
So funny. You're like, oh, I hate Freddy because he does
tilt, balls. Bitch.
Yeah.
I don't think
he probably did.
I don't think he says bitch.
You know he did.
He should have.
Freddy can like turn into other people in the non-dream world. Like that's how he tricked Gibbs. Remember Gibbs?
Who the hell's Gibbs?
That was the girl who you knew she was edgy because she had a backwards hat.
Ah, yeah.
Like he came back as her like dead boyfriend, dead abusive boyfriend.
No, I thought it's because she was asleep. She passed out.
No, she passed out like once she got in the cornfield.
Yeah, and then that's when he took over.
I don't remember.
Yeah,
because
he can't do that shit if he's not if it's not.
No, he did it with Jason. He did it with Jason, because he in the very beginning He, like, was changing faces as he stabbed that woman to a tree. Anyway, it's a pretty good fight in that there's a lot of violence.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, like, there's a Freddy does an elbow drop.
Yeah.
But Jason is, like, a whole head taller than him. Uh-huh. And they're both unkillable.
Yeah.
Unwoundable.
Kicks Jason in the junk, which has no effect on him.
They, like, cut each other's arms off. And nothing happens.
Freddy's actually, like kind of... I don't know where he learned to fight, but yeah. He's actually got some skills.
Yeah, I think he he gains the knowledge of anybody he haunts his dream.
I think you're thinking of Highlander.
Yeah, there can only be one. That's,
yeah, what are you kill them and you absorb their essence. Yeah. Or
wait, are we not talking about Highlander?
No.
Really?
Yeah.
We're gonna have to scrap this whole video.
But he was like, because in the real world, Jason should just destroy him.
Why?
Because Freddy's just like my size.
Yeah. So what? He's been killed before. He burned to death. He's like a demon spirit.
Yeah, but that's in the... He's like... He can do those crazy things in the dream world. He can't do like... He should just be like a regular guy.
But he like... He's brought to the real world from a dream.
Yeah.
So that's pretty magical.
Yeah, but he doesn't have like all his powers and stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, he can't be killed. I mean, so what's the point?
You could like chop his head off.
That happened.
Spoilers.
Damn, that happened. Didn't kill him. Here's the thing. Does Jason have blood? Is Jason a corpse? A very important plot point resolves around Freddy using tranquilizer to knock Jason out. And there's another plot problem where they're like, we're running out of tranquilizer because they just keep feeding it to him. Like, does he have a very strong metabolism? Does he have blood?
I think he does have blood because he bleeds quite a bit.
Yeah, but that doesn't make sense.
In the movie.
You know what I mean? Doesn't make any sense. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, the laws of biology don't really apply to...
Joe versus Volcano's climactic battle lasts...
Does the volcano have blood?
Yeah, it's magma.
Everybody knows that.
Wait, stupid? Here's the thing about the climactic battle in Joe versus Volcano. I believe the lead up is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
However, the battle itself lasts for less than 30 seconds, and there's no clear winner. So, in the way.
No matter who wins.
In the way. We all lose. In the context of what would be designated a versus battle, nothing happens.
Yeah. Yeah, there is no battle.
It's kind of hard to fight a volcano.
He goes to jump into the volcano. The third Meg Ryan decides that she loves him.
Which you're like, okay. And he's like, well, I guess I love you. He's legitimately like, well, I guess I love you too. I'm about to jump in a volcano.
I like that. Yeah. I like that.
And she calls him out on it. And he's like, well, we did just meet. And
yeah.
I am dying. So sure, I just don't want to make you upset. I will jump in a volcano.
That was actually one of my favorite lines. I wrote it down and said, he's just,
I love you too. I've never been in love with anybody before either. It's great. I am glad. But the timing stinks. I gotta go.
Right. We were just like, oh, I'm so glad this is in the movie.
Yep. But the timing stinks. And he just walks up to the volcano. Right. But she decides she's going to jump in with him.
Because, after they get married, of course.
Yeah, by Abe Bogota, the white guy.
Why else do I know him?
Masquerading as, he's kind of a famous comedian.
Okay, I knew his name.
Masquerading as a Native American.
No, he was, because it was founded by...
Or a Samoan, or...
It was founded by, like, Hawaiians, Jewish people, and something else.
And they all love orange soda?
Yeah, so I think Abe Bogota fulfilled the, like, Jewish part of it.
I guess.
And they over-tanned him, so they're like, yeah, he's Hawaiian.
And me saying the orange soda thing is not like a... Like a racist comment against like Hawaiian Jewish people. That's actually in the movie.
Yeah.
They're obsessed with orange soda. They drink it like by the liter.
Yeah.
And they even decorate like their necklaces and their headdresses with the orange soda cans.
It's just nonsense.
Yeah, it makes no sense. But so they jump into the volcano. At that immediate time, like a burst of steam comes up and shoots them back out of the volcano.
They are a little singed.
It's safely into the water. And then the entire island goes into the ocean, presumably killing
everyone,
thousands of
everyone,
Polynesian Jewish people,
which is, you know, they've had it rough enough.
And then Tom Hanks, of course, there's the callback to the fancy waterproof
right.
chest that he bought earlier in the film with the Lloyd Bridges credit card, and they use that as a raft.
I like that luggage guy too. Yeah. Talk about cast chemistry. That guy's like, this is a
very exciting as a luggage problem. I believe I have just the thing.
Yeah, there was a lot of good like little characters. Like, yeah. I said, the boss at his work was good. Ozzie Davis as the driver was good. The luggage guy was good. There was a lot of...
I wasn't a huge fan of Meg Ryan, I don't think.
Even Abe Vigoda.
Dagmar did okay.
Abe Vigoda as the chief.
Yeah.
Where he has the... he has the little teddy bear.
He's like, this is my soul.
You go, oh, you better not lose it. Like, Tom Hanks is like, I hope you don't lose it. He goes, me too.
Without missing a beat, Tom Hanks is on it.
I think that comes back to the chemistry, too. There was a lot of good actors in that movie. And like I said, Meg Ryan was kind of like, I don't want to say like my least favorite, because, you know, I like Meg Ryan.
Meh.
You know, she's pretty and she's, you know, appealing. But, you know, she was kind of like did the least amount of
acting.
Well, no, I want to say that because she played multiple roles. She was in the whole movie. And I guess they had to give her something to do like the first half of the movie, because otherwise, like, her main character,
the
cover, wouldn't even be in the in the film. Yeah, I think, you know, the climactic battle, though, is them jumping in the volcano, getting shot back out, and then
it's like not a battle.
Yeah,
because I mean, like, if it would have won, if Joe would have won, did the volcano win then? Technically,
volcanoes always win.
No, because, like, if he would have, because Joe would have won because he would have beaten the volcano, fed the...
Like I said, it's Joe versus crippling depression.
Yeah. And I guess he wins. No, he does commit suicide, so he just fails at committing suicide.
Yeah, he's not very good at it.
And then he's, like, now he's in this, like, marriage, possibly a sham marriage.
Yeah.
Definitely shotgun marriage.
Yeah.
Because you know she's pregnant.
Oh, yeah, for sure. With somebody else's kid. With Abe Vigoda's kid.
Oh, God. Weird twist.
Yeah, that's for the sequel. That's they address that in the musical, I think.
Yeah, it's really the unspoken part of the musical.
But definitely Freddy versus Jason for the climactic battle.
All right, so
I'm curious about this next part.
Worthiness of having verses in the title.
Mm-hmm.
Freddy versus Jason, right?
Yeah.
Which is not good because that means we're tied.
Yeah.
So.
So we'll have to do a tiebreaker.
Okay. So why do you think Joe versus the Volcano did not deserve this to push it over?
I guess because it's more like Joe versus like himself in this movie. Yep. It's, and I hate to say the Joe versus crippling depression again.
But Joe versus life.
Yeah. Like you know Joe versus his shitty life.
Yeah.
Or Joe versus PTSD.
That'd be pretty.
Would be good too.
I'd watch that movie.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean,
also
there's...
the volcano. We don't see it until the last 10 minutes of the movie.
Uh-huh.
It's only in the movie for a little bit. Like, I don't think they do a bad job of building it up, but they do a bad job of making it a threat.
Yeah.
So, like, why do you want Joe to win?
And volcano is just more symbolic of all the other crap going on in his life. Whereas, you know, Freddy versus Jason, they're actually, you know,
versing each other.
Yeah, they start off working together because Freddy's pulling the strings.
Let me read the Wikipedia summary of it. And I think that this sums it up, and I was very frustrated with this. However, while Jason succeeds in causing enough fear for Freddy to haunt the town again, which is Freddy infiltrates Jason's dreams because he doesn't have enough power himself to kill in dreams yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so Jason angers Freddy by depriving Krueger of his potential victims.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely singular. He only does that once.
Mm-hmm.
This ultimately sends the two undying monsters into a violent conflict.
Yeah.
Which is true. You're definitely rooting for one, so that's, I think they do a good job with the verses there.
Mm-hmm.
They have more than one fight, which I think is good.
Mm-hmm. They fight on Freddy's turf in the dream world, and then they fight on Jason's turf in the real world at Camp Crystal Lake.
And then there's initially a definite winner, and then there's not a definite winner, and then you think they're both dead, and then they're not both dead, which you're like, perfect. Now Freddy vs. Jason 3. Mm-hmm. This time it's personal.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Freddy vs. Jason 2, back in time.
Yeah. Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah. I want to watch that. I want to watch this.
So we got a problem.
All right. What's lightning round? Should I pause it and let's think about it?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We're back at you. We went into our brainstorming session to come up with a lightning round tiebreaker, because the thing is that Joe versus Dante's Peak is probably a better movie. Mm-hmm. So it won the two general categories, and Freddy vs. Jason is a better versus. Better, not a good example of versus, because like they still had a lot of problems with the climactic battle and the quality of being a versus film. So we got split. So what we're going to do is we came up with something we haven't actually talked about, because Dan was mentioning pacing and quality actors and all this other stuff that you usually talk about when you talk about movies. And I think we already covered those as subjects. So we picked soundtrack. Like, how would a movie win this category?
We talked about soundtrack on a previous podcast.
We also did soundtracks of movies as a category. Uh-huh. But then we also did soundtracks in a movie as a category.
So I think when we did that, we talked about criteria. You know, whether or not the songs actually add to the movie or add to a scene, or if they're just in there for filler, or if they're just in there and they seem random, or if they're in there to actually add to the ambiance or add to the story, or in a positive way add something to the experience. On Freddy vs. Jason,
I think it was popular rock music of the time.
Yeah, and it seemed very random, I think, to me, like how it was put together.
Sort of like the cast, where immediately you're like, oh, they're saying this one character's name, they must be important. You're like, why is this stoner with them? It's not even his van.
Yeah.
And another problem with that is like, with Freddy vs. Jason, neither of them had the like Halloween soundtrack quality, mm-hmm. where it was like they had a recognizable song that you associate with mm-hmm. the movie, mm-hmm. and then it would be, you know, played to make something dread or build suspense or something. It's just like, nope, we're going to play some, you know, no-name rock group that, you know, in 2003, so that's, you know, take your pick, Limp Bizkit, Papa Roach.
God, the soundtrack had 20 songs on it.
What?
20 tracks, man.
That's a lot.
Some people you may have heard of, you probably know these guys better than I do, but like Killswitch Engage, you ever heard of them?
I know it's a band.
Slipknot.
Yeah, I know Slipknot.
Seven Dust.
Oh.
Typo Negative.
That's my blood type.
Lamb of God.
Oh, I know, I'm O positive, sorry.
Seether.
Yeah. So these are all ones I recognize.
Yeah, so I was trying to...
I don't remember the soundtrack.
It's not used super well. A lot of it is instrumental, and it's not even really good instrumental.
Yeah, they do some jump scares, but I saw them mm-hmm. coming a million miles away.
Yeah, so it's not...
Humble brag.
I mean, definitely not used as well as like in the first Halloween film soundtrack.
The Exorcist. Yeah. That's a good...
And not even like just like the main theme in Halloween.
Right.
But it's just like the instrumentals in between, you know, each scene or each jump cut adds to it. Just so scary. It just makes it, I mean, that's just, you know, part of John Carpenter, the genius of, mm-hmm. of him.
Yeah.
Versus whoever.
Oh, that, versus. Nice.
Versus.
John Carpenter.
Whoever the hell directed this movie.
I think Danny Elfman versus John Carpenter soundtrack battle. I would listen to that.
Yeah.
I mean, I already have a winner, so I guess that's not fair. All right, so let's... anyway, I like Joe vs. the Volcano's use of a soundtrack because I don't think there was dialogue for the first 15 minutes of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't feel uncomfortable. It didn't feel... There wasn't silence either. I thought they did a good job with that. And then they have sort of classic songs that I don't think they use too much modern music in that movie.
Uh-huh.
And there's a really funny scene. Like, not funny, just like... endearing scene where Tom Hanks is, after the ship goes down, he's just dancing his little butt off.
Yeah.
And it's just him. And then there's like the scene with the moon, and the music there is, I thought, did a really good job.
Yeah.
Here am I.
Patiently waiting,
hoping and longing.
At the very beginning, they had that 16-ton song.
Mm-hmm.
16 tons, what do you get?
Right.
16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. Say,
Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
I mean, it worked perfectly.
It's like a chain gang song.
Yeah. Yeah, it was almost like these guys are imprisoned in this job.
Right.
Which they could leave whenever they want.
Right. Which he does. But spoilers.
But and the only reason he does that is because he gets a death sentence.
Right. A different kind of.
It's almost like they are on a chain gang and they're all just like kind of middling toward the factory, you know, and they even follow the exact path to get to the factory. It's like they're stuck in a loop. It had Blue Moon by Elvis, which I thought was cool. Other thought that part that I thought was kind of funny is when they're on the island and they're celebrating the fact that Joe is there to make the sacrifice. And they have the Islanders, like, instrumental music, but it's the Hava Nagila.
See? Full circle.
Yeah. And there was another song that they did. I can't remember what it was on the island that they did an instrumental version, which, like, it was so weird that it right. was cool.
The juxtaposition.
Yeah. I think definitely that goes to Joe versus Volcano.
I think this is the first time we've agreed on everything.
Yeah.
But the good news is that we have a winner now.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't think I liked... I guess this just means that Joe vs. the Volcano is a better movie.
It's a better movie.
But it's not that good of a versus movie.
Right.
But Freddy vs. Jason wasn't that good either.
No.
Because the battle, even though it was a good climactic battle, it wasn't good.
No.
It was better. And the title... I guess, the title, like, they work together for a while, and then Freddy arbitrarily gets angry at him, and then they team up at the end. So, yeah. That's dumb.
Yeah, but I think if you look deeper into Joe versus the Volcano, it's not really him versus the volcano, like we said, but there is like an inner battle going on with
right.
him.
Joe versus
Joe. There is a fight there.
Right.
And a fight for whether he even wants to live.
Right.
You know, and if he does live, you know, what kind of life is he really living? And,
right. Because it's like when he was the fireman, they talk about him mm-hmm. going up a second time up mm-hmm. a burning staircase, where it's like he's okay dying as long as it's for a purpose, mm-hmm. which I guess like is the sort of the microcosm of mm-hmm. him, like the implication of what a firefighter is in that movie.
Yeah.
And sort of like he's going to do the same thing. He's going to go into the fire to save people, sort of thing.
Yeah.
But okay, so our winner is Joe versus the Volcano. We'll be back with some recommendations in just a second. I totally forgot to pick a favorite line, so Dan's going to pick,
mm-hmm.
or not pick, Dan's going to tell us his favorite lines.
All right, so you talked about the stoner guy in there who...
Freddy vs. Jason.
Right.
FVJ.
When I first saw this movie, I thought it was Jason Mewes from like Jay and Silent Bob.
Oh!
Because I thought it was him, because yeah, yeah. that's exactly the character that he was playing.
Right.
You know, after they see Jason for the first time, the geek guy, Linderman, says, that psycho in the hockey mask was real. And Freeburg, the stoner guy, says, dude, that goalie was pissed about something.
Right.
I got a little chuckle out of that.
It's not bad.
I got a little chuckle out of that. My least favorite line in Freddy vs. Jason was...
The rest of them.
Yeah, the Mark kid, the kid who's like kind of the sidekick of the two that are in the psychiatric.
Right.
He's just awful in this movie. And
you want some free advice? Coffee. Make friends with it. Mark! That's enough.
You're like, why did you break into a high school?
Yeah, why are you screaming at this?
I think she's having a seizure. Yeah, that was awful.
My least favorite line in Joe versus the Volcano is when we first meet the third Meg Ryan character. Mm. And she's calling Joe Felix for right. some reason.
Right.
For no reason.
Right.
And she says...
That outfit's wearing you, Felix.
Why are you calling me Felix? My name is Joe.
I'm calling you Felix because I do what I want.
That makes no sense.
No, she's like an edgy 90s chick.
No.
Right?
There's better ways to be edgy than just purposely calling somebody by the wrong name. There's no... That could have, you know, saved like 3 minutes off the runtime.
Because he had stuff to do.
I got shit to do, man.
All right.
My favorite line was the interaction between Joe first meets Ozzie Davis's limo driver character, Marshall. And he says, what kind of clothes do you got now? And Joe says, well, I got the kind of clothes I'm wearing. And Marshall goes, so you got no clothes.
I do remember.
That was just a diss on Joe, man.
Joe doesn't care. He had long hair.
Yeah. Which that was awful.
That was weird.
That was like the Nicolas Cage long hair.
It sort of looked like hair. I expected, like, did you see Road to Perdition with Tom Hanks?
Yeah.
I expected him to, like, try and reprise that role as a skinny young man, mm-hmm. where he had, like, long hair.
Yeah.
I do remember one of the lines I hated from Freddy vs. Jason, because I wrote it down. Are you familiar with the literary phrase, Chekhov's gun? So, Chekhov was a Russian playwright, and he said, whenever, like, a gun is introduced in the first act, it has to be fired by the end. Like, and that's just, it's how, you know, an author sets up an audience. It's like, it's basically foreshadowing. They're in the basement.
Wait a minute. Freddy died by fire, Jason by water. How can we use that?
Basically giving exposition to the audience because there wasn't enough already. And I said, oh, God. And the funniest thing, this isn't really a nod to them ignoring Chekhov's gun rule, which, I mean, like, if you can break any of those, like, well-patterned tropes, then it's like, hey, you know, you're doing something new. What they did was, no, we're gonna have fire and water, but they're not gonna die from that. I'm like, that's just lazy. Mm-hmm. Like, they're gonna die from Freddy's claw and then his hands. Just like, I was so upset.
Yeah,
but yeah, so that was my least favorite line.
It's like, well, I got matches and a hose,
right? Can we
is that gonna help?
Can we use that?
This is all I got in my in my shed here.
Also,
all I got is these matches and this hose. What are we gonna do?
Her line about, like, welcome to my world, bitch. Yeah. I'm like, wait, is your world covered in fire? Like, yeah. What? How is this your world? Also, where'd you get that machete? Yeah. Like, that's not yours. I had a lot of least favorite lines from this.
Yeah, I could tell. What's your recommendation?
Oh, so my
that was a good movie.
My recommendation is called Versus, and it's this Japanese movie where these two guys escape from prison. And you don't know what's going on, and you're sort of on this one guy's side, and then you meet this, like, Yakuza boss, and he's just starts killing people, and he's just got these lunatic associates with him. You find out that the one guy who escaped prison, who wasn't murdered, is, like, a really good fighter, and then they have occasional flashbacks to, like, feudal Japan, so it's like these two guys are samurais, and you're like, oh, wait. They knew each other in a past life where they constantly fought each other, and it's they have to fulfill a prophecy, and it's all this, like, convoluted stuff, but amazing action sequences, like, over-the-top stunts and practical effects, and the final battle lasts for, like, 25 minutes, but, like, between that, there's all this other sort of, like, excitement and, like, just leaking parts of the plot, and exposition is not clubbed over the head where it's like, oh, Freddy's a ghost and Jason had, you know, his mom and all this stuff. It's just like, I thought it was really cool, and it was also one of the movies I saw where the replay value is great. Dan, what about you?
I picked the same movie, the obscure, like, Japanese movie.
One of the characters' names? I don't know the answer, so good luck. Good luck, dummy.
I was gonna think of, like, a random
racist name,
Oriental name, so that I would,
like, Oriental. They're not making rugs.
So I didn't know if it was Chinese or Japanese.
I said Japanese.
Oh, I wasn't listening.
Damn. No.
I'm gonna go with The People versus Larry Flint.
I didn't see that movie.
It's great.
Yeah,
it's really good.
All right.
And
Woody Harrelson, right?
Woody Harrelson's great.
Woody Harrelson's a pretty good actor.
This was like the first movie where I realized that he was a good actor.
And you didn't like him in Cheers?
I mean, he's fine in Cheers, where he plays a character named Woody.
Not too tough.
And he's just kind of just like the lovable goof in that.
Yeah.
And he was in that, what's the movie where he's Natural Born Killers?
I did not like that movie.
And see, that's why I didn't think that.
Yeah, that's fair.
Why I was surprised when Woody Harrelson was, when this movie came out, that he was getting all this, like, Oscar buzz and things like that. I'm like, really? The guy from Natural Born Killers and the guy from Cheers? But it turns out he's really, really good. Yeah. And he's Larry Flint, the guy who created Hustler Magazine,
right,
which kind of took what Playboy was doing to, like, a whole nother level. And Playboy was, like kind of the go-to for, seeing naked people.
It's the classy man. It's the classy gentleman's way to look at vagina.
Yeah. And then, you know, Penthouse, like, took it a little step further. But Larry Flint's, like, you know, took it 10 steps further.
Right.
And decided that to really push, you know, the barriers of decency. And
is that because the whole point is he's bringing broad up on congressional charges of
indecency and pornography, right. And it's basically like decency laws.
Yeah.
And Larry, the real Larry Flynt, actually plays the judge in that film, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, that's a good nod.
Like when you think of like Hugh Hefner, you think of like this guy that just like gets to bang like young women, and like he's got this wonderful life, and you know, Larry Flynt was just like a really tortured man, and he ends up getting like put in a wheelchair, you know, halfway through the film. And Edward Norton's in it. He's really good at it. And surprisingly, Courtney Love is like...
gross.
She is gross, but she's really good in this movie. She got a lot of nominations and things like that, too.
Would not have guessed that.
As his girlfriend, significant other character in there. It's got humor in it. It's got drama in it. It's
based on a true story.
It's definitely not something you watch with the kids.
Hope not.
Anywhere near the the television or hearing distance. It's so well done, and it's something that could have easily been done wrong or just made overly smutty and not good, but it was done so well. I remember I saw it in theater when it came out. It's just a really good film. And so, you know, People versus Larry Flynt is actually the title of the court case. You know, so,
and he was really versing them.
Yeah. Like, he showed up.
Battle.
He showed up like, you know, t-shirts that said like F this court.
Right.
And, you know, stuff. He was just like, he unapologetic for what he was doing, but also like a, you know, whether he was cognizant of or not, was a pioneer for free speech.
Right.
You know, not the guy that you would really think of as somebody who'd be spearheading something like that.
They're not going to put him on a stamp.
No, no, he's not going to get a stamp, you know, next to Rosa Parks or something like that. But, you know, it's guys like that who he kind of, you know, he gets a bad name because of the smut, you know, aspect of it. But it really, the movie kind of really makes you, endears the character or the person to you a little bit more. And then you realize, you know, how he makes his money and things like that. And you kind of come back down to earth. But I think Woody does a really good job of conveying, you know, who Larry Flynt is. And, it's just a really good movie. So that's cool. My recommendation.
Awesome. Now we're on to the plug side of things. Dan, tell us what you're up to.
Still got my wrestling podcast, Rhino Wrestling Review. It's on iTunes.
I heard you're trying to get Jess to help you out with that.
Yeah.
I think when this episode goes up, maybe she'll already be on one or two of yours.
Yeah, my wife's not really into the wrestling, but she kind of like follows it based on just being in the same room while I'm watching it. But then, you know, when she hears me listening to other podcasts, like in the car, she'll just chime in with little snarky comments.
Right.
And I said, this is really good.
She could be the hype man.
She could be a really good hype man. And she's like really mean too. So she'd be really
the perfect hype.
She's really good at doing snarky comments. So I'm gonna try to get her on there. But yeah, it's on iTunes. It's on YouTube. It's everywhere. So
awesome.
That's my biggest thing.
Twitter.
The Twitter tweets.
Yeah.
The tweeter.
Yeah.
At Dan Ryno. At DanRyno. You can follow me on Twitter. That's pretty much it.
Okay. Great. Well, this has been Comparing Apples to Oranges. I'm Mike.
Daniel.
And we were talking about Freddy vs. Jason, Joe vs. the Volcano, and Versus films. We ended up deciding that Joe vs. the Volcano was a better movie, and we might have messed up this time. Sorry, guys.
Well, you know, we should do
a special lightning round.
If people have ideas, maybe they should tweet them to you.
No, I don't think we did a bad job picking the movies. I think we...
No, I'm just saying, like for future reference, you know, for... you know, because we have ideas for things we want to do in the future, but if you have anything else.
Also, I was betting around the idea of having a sign-off at the end, and I can't come up with one, so... Thanks for listening to episode 12 of the podcast, and I hope you enjoyed one full year of this podcast. If you liked what you saw, look us up on Tumblr. We're Comparing Apples to Oranges. That's all one word, .tumblr.com. That's where all the links for my co-hosts and info about upcoming and past episodes will be. If you have comments or ideas for future episodes, just like Dan was saying, please send it to Twitter. We are at The Cato Podcast, all one word, or email us at catopodcast@gmail.com. Intro, outro, and music bed music was Thumbs Up, that's the name of the song, by the artist Leisure B. He's great. If you liked what you heard. Check them out on humanworkshop.com. All right, talk to you guys later. Still no good sign off though, so maybe next year. Bye.